So what do you say, guys? You know, I like gladiatorial combat, especially in person. Can you have morality without God? What do you guys say?
Have a concept of morality without God, but it won't be an objective morality.
So let's even pull out the word objective. Can you have a moral system without God? If you choose,
you can try to, but there's going to be no way to fully enforce it or guarantee it because it will be dependent on finite beings.
All right. So really what we have to look at is people are so enamored with the idea of morality. Can you have morality without God? And a lot of religious people will say no. First, we have to understand the significance of this idea. Perhaps the most important idea, if you can picture the Jewish concept that God, as an infinite being, needs nothing. He created human beings, Ramchal would put it. We were created as pleasure seekers, and we were created to get the maximum, which is the infinite. What you need most to get that pleasure is to be aware of the truths of life. Why is morality important? Because you have to know, to the extent that a concept is important or central to life, it's to that extent you're going to put energy into getting a handle on it. And to the extent that it's not important, no big deal. I don't know if I ever pointed out to you, but you've heard of black holes in the universe, correct? You've heard of the idea? All right. Daniel, have you heard of black holes?
Yes, Rabbi.
Do you believe there are black holes in the universe?
Theoretically, I haven't seen one, but
Yeah, well, it's like God, you know, like a you know, the thing is, seeing is believing. That's for savages in Europe. What makes a sophisticated society, Daniel, is a society that knows things because they know it, not because they saw it.
Fine, so I'll say that I'm not like a astronomer, so I have reason to believe it just because people that are smarter than me say it exists, but I haven't looked into it enough to believe or not believe.
And why did Daniel not look into it much?
Doesn't really affect my
Because
life.
what?
It doesn't really affect my life whether they exist or not. I don't know.
Very good. Because while the evidence you have for black holes, Daniel, is rather sketchy, the significance to your life is nil. And therefore, a little bit of information by people who ought to know better is enough for you to say there are such things. And if tomorrow the world's greatest physicist came out and said, guess what? There are no black holes. It was actually a smudge in the Hubble telescope. So Dr. Schroeder goes nuts, but you and I say, all right, so there are no black holes. What's this left? You know, what's the big deal? So we really have to have, just for a moment, the concept of God is centrally important because of the question of right and wrong. What is a moral system? Can you be moral without God? I think is a bit of a misnomer. Person says, a lot of people would say, of course you could be moral without God. So first we have to define terms. Noah Weinberg always pointed out that you can't discuss an idea while leaving in place the important terms that are not defined, because you may mean one thing, the other person means something else. Can you be moral without God? First we have to ask, can we give me a basic working definition of morality in which when we get to the difference between yes, God and no God, it'll work either way. It just will get into more detail differences. Take the term morality, and can we come up with a definition? Excuse me. Can we come up with a definition of morality or a moral system? That would work just as a defining term. Somebody give me a definition of morality, which would work for the religious view and for the secular view.
Doing what's right and wrong.
I'm sorry, one more time.
Doing what's right and not doing what's wrong.
Well, okay, so look at morality as it's not so much the doing, but a system. It's a system for evaluating our what we do, a system for evaluating behavior or activity as right or wrong, good or evil, acceptable or unacceptable. A moral system is a system for evaluating behavior as good or evil. Now, doesn't that work whether there is a God or not? A moral system. Take Nazism. Nazism contains within itself a moral component, a system for evaluating behavior as right or wrong. Is that not clear? What we'll find is the problem is not that without morality, without God, there is no morality. Without God, there's infinite morality. So let's try to picture. The Jew and the Nazi are trying to have a nice discussion. And suppose neither one of them have any knives or guns in their hand. The Jew is saying, A, B, and C are good acts, and X, Y, and Z are evil acts. The Nazi says, no, A, B, and C are evil acts. It's X, Y, and Z that are good acts. Supposing they're both intelligent people, what is the source of their disagreement? What is the source of their disagreement? And what I'm really trying to ask you is, in a world where there are many different views of what makes something right or wrong, many different views where intelligent people will disagree as to whether a particular act is good or evil. What's the kernel, the core of it? Hey, Daniel. Thank Daniel. Daniel, you can hear me now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Daniel, killing people, is that good or evil?
It depends on the context.
I don't expect people to remember me that long of a time. In other words, very often, so let me tell you what often happens. I asked a class of new guy, Daniel, killing people, is that good or evil? Invariably, almost always, I'd say, it's evil. So I would say to him, so you mean that a guy who joins the Israel Defense Forces, where they teach people how to kill other people, must be an evil person? Well, no, in that case, all right, one more time, is killing good or evil? And then Daniel, he gives me the answer. Daniel just said, Daniel, killing, is that good or evil?
It depends on the context.
It depends on the context. All right. So now we're saying killing is not intrinsically good or evil. It depends on the context. Okay, so now that Daniel and Adolf Hitler are both on the same side. You know, I have to make you feel uncomfortable some way or another, Daniel. So if you end up getting it right, that's generally the way I do it. So we have a world where sometimes killing is good, sometimes killing is evil. Nevertheless, Daniel, I love you enough to know that it's likely that you and Hitler still have major disagreements about killing. So you both agree that sometimes it's good and sometimes it's evil. What would describe the difference between you and him? Assuming that you have a certain moral system and he has a certain moral system.
What that context is.
Okay, but get more specifically. Not so much context. I think that really we're going to get to definition. That in every case, whenever you have the question about a moral system, what you really have to ask is, what are the truths? What are the assumptions of reality underlying that moral system? The Jewish system, and the Jewish systems, there exists an infinite supreme being who created humanity and transmitted through the document that we call Torah, the information of A, how to connect to that being, in which he defines that being as infinite good, but he defines the world as a place where he wants you to choose that relationship, and therefore choose to do the acts that are good or evil, I mean the acts that would connect you to that infinite source of goodness, or the opposite. Now, the person who disagrees with me, he generally doesn't say, well, I'm learning The Nazi generally doesn't say, I'm learning Torah differently. What is he saying?
He has a different source.
Yeah, he said, I don't believe in your assumptions of truth. I believe that either there is no God or it's God of nature. I believe that the Jews invented that document called Torah just to take control of humanity, blah, 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 blah. And therefore, what you call good is really an evil manipulation of humanity. And as the guy generally does not say that I believe that there's a God who gave the Torah and the Mishnah and the Talmud, but you're making a mistake. What we really have in the differences of opinion within humanity are two or more different views of what is the reality of the situation. And we can go further to say that the Nazi, again, I'm not saying he would say, but if you look at total objectivity, a very intelligent person, the Nazi would say, if I believed what you just said, that there's an infinite supreme being who created us, as an infinitely loving act in which the maximum that we can get out of our lives is to connect to that source, and that Torah is the information of how to do it, then I, of course, would agree with you that your moral system is correct. I'm saying your moral system is false. It's a statement of falsehood. Falsehood itself lies. And that actually the realities were all part of the animal kingdom. Survival of the fittest is primary element, in which you're trying to get people to sacrifice whatever pleasures they have for the sake of a non-existent world to come. And I'm going to try to liberate humanity from your Jewish lies in order to live a much more meaningful life and to get the maximum pleasure out of whatever life you can experience. I would almost go so far as to say that I would turn to the Nazi and say, and I'm willing to hear arguments about this, but I could turn to the Nazi and say, Mr. Nazi, if you're right about life, that the Jews invented God and Torah, then in fact we're all part of the animal kingdom and nothing, then your morality makes much more sense than ours. And here we get to the crux. We're going to talk about it more. What we get to the crux is, if the Jewish assumptions of truth are true, then Jewish morality makes a lot of sense. But if the Jewish assumptions about truth are not true, and therefore the Nazis are, a world of maxim we are, we're accidents of blind fate, we're part of the animal kingdom, created itself out of just accident upon accident, then the Nazi system does make more sense. See, what we really ought to understand, the disaster here of why it's important to know what is true, is because whether the Jews or the non-believers are true will determine which morality makes more sense. A person may be a Jew. He may be a nice person as an individual. But if he's saying that there is no God, or if there is a God, he couldn't care less because he didn't give us the Torah, what you're saying that there are two very different systems about morality, one called Judaism, one called Nazism. And the Nazi one is based on truth and reality, and the Jews are based on a pack of lies. You begin to hear the problem. And lest you think that that's, again, because we have so many Jews that want to be nice people, but they do want to get God off their back, not realizing by getting God off your back, you're creating a moral system where Nazism makes much more sense than Judaism on the question of what is life. Do we hear the idea? I don't even have to start with the question of how do I know one or the other. I can't understand what the consequences are on the basic disagreement between humanity. Now, it just so happens that as humanity over the 3,300 years of history, from the time God gave us the Torah till now, Torah tells us that we're eternal. We're going to be around forever. The rules of history about the rise and fall of civilization, rise, fall, and disappearance, will not change the Jews, will not affect the Jews. The Jew as an individual has free will to stay Jewish or not, but the Jewish people as a people does not have free will. literally to the point that if the Jewish people make a decision, and I think that's what happened in the early 1800s, when the Jewish people seemingly as a group made a decision to disappear within the civilizations of Europe and to lose their Jewishness in that world, that decision will, Hayolosihia, the Navi Yechezkel talked about, that which you decide that we'll disappear and we'll join all the other groups, will not happen. That simply will not happen. That it's at that point, it's in Yechezkel chapter 20, look at it on your own, that at that point, I will drive you out of those nations, into the desert of the nations, I will judge you face to face. The Jewish people, as an individual, it's almost like Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. I can't know what this atom will do or that. Just as a group, I can know how the group of atoms work. Every individual Jew has freedom of choice to stay Jewish or drop out. But the Jewish people as a whole, having accepted Torah, cannot disappear. And when we make decisions that imply that we are going to, whatever is necessary, it's our own study of history, we'll see detail, whatever is necessary that will drive the Jews out of that possibility of a comfortable death, will take place because Jewish people are eternal. But what humanity becomes, remember, as Daniel said, it doesn't matter. Daniel, as a good Jew, and Adolf Hitler as a nasty human being, will both agree that sometimes it's right to kill and sometimes it's wrong. Total. The difference is, what are the truths of life? Now, we ought to understand that we do live in a world where almost every moral society, every moral system will tell us that sometimes it's wrong to kill and sometimes it's right. You understand Nazism does that too. It's wrong to kill Nazis, it's right to kill Jews. Every civilization will agree that there are some times in which killing is the right thing to do. What we have to ask is, how do I know what's true? But please remember, you cannot opt out of being part of a religion. You think so? Give me a definition of a religion. A religion is an idea system, generally revolving around God, but not necessarily. A basic statement of what you believe are the truths of life. Religion generally talks about a supreme being, but Mahatma Gandhi put it best when he said, every man has his own religion. He didn't mean every religious man has his own religion. At first, I thought he meant that even Shammai and Hillel will disagree on something. Every man has his own religion. That there be places where no two people seem to be so alike, they won't disagree on something about what is true. Shammai and Hillel will disagree in certain areas. But then further on, I understood that what he meant is every human being. I remember thinking at the time and many years ago, you mean Goyim also? Yeah. Every man has his own religion, means every man has his understanding of what are the truths of life. That's his religion. What he believes that, well, guys, said, no, well, I don't believe in God. You're misunderstanding yourself. It's not that you don't believe in God. It's that you do believe there is no God. Take seriously your essential principles. There is no God. And then try to think through what are the natural consequences or what makes something right or wrong. Because in all cases, every moral system, in a minute, okay, every moral system is based on what you understand to be true. Figure out what you understand to be true and what are the consequences that are a result of that. First, because just like we asked about the Big Bang, where you believe it because you saw some evidence and it wasn't that important. Now, you have to understand the importance of an idea to really get into an idea, to understand, I really have to understand what is true. Yeah, Gabe?
What about someone who's like entirely agnostic and has no firm beliefs on anything? Like whatsoever.
Oh, well, in that case, in other words, He obviously can leave your thing on the computer. You're not making any noise for us. That's fine. Yeah. The guy who's a firm agnostic, I know nothing. Well, first of all, he should never cross the street because he doesn't know if there's a car coming or not. He could look, but he says, but I never trust myself. He also should never eat anything because it may be poisonous. So what I'm going to say is he's going to have to make certain decisions. Risks, almost, let us say. And, you know, I can accept the fact that even though we say God requires of you to know there's a God, but two different people, one can know it more, one can know it less. I would say, on the other hand, Gabe, a guy who really doesn't know should be a totally Torah observant Jew, just in case.
Then why wouldn't he follow any other religion?
Ah! In that case, he's still stuck. He can't even kill himself in his miserable situation because it may be a sin, according to many of them. So, but in a way, let me put this in, Gabe, in terms that you said. Take a Torah observant Jew. You got it, Gabe? A Torah observant Jew who finds a well-wrapped sandwich. He's really hungry, and it looks like it was wrapped really well. Looks very healthy. I mean, but now he can't figure out whether it came from a store that is kosher or a store that's trade. My guess is if he's not starving to death, if he's starving to death, it's mutter to eat it. But if not, my suggestion is that any Torah observant Jew, at this point, he has to be slightly agnostic. He doesn't know if the kosher, he knows there's a God, but he doesn't know what God has to say about this sandwich. My guess is at that point, you don't eat it. So I would say a very good reason for all agnostics to be Torah observant Jews.
Well, if you don't ask a question, you're not doing anything wrong. So if he just doesn't check the label.
Torah says you are required to check the label.
One of the labels is just unclear.
My guess is at that point, you don't need it.
Because you're unsure?
Because it may be there is no God and there's nothing wrong with eating this ham sandwich. Or maybe there is a God, in which case. So my guess is that an agnostic says, I don't know, but everything he does in life is testifying to the fact that he's assuming one side, not I don't know. I think it was Henry James who said this idea. I think Henry James, I'm not sure. You can Google it up. I don't know how to do these things. He said, in the world of theory, everything in life is yes, no, and maybe. And I like that because the more you learn, the more you can clarify the yes, no, and I don't know. Yes, no, and I don't know. The world of thought, again, it's a sandwich kosher. Yes, no, I don't know. But in a world of action, I don't know doesn't exist. You have to act as if it is or as if it isn't. So you have to ask, in a world of action, you have only two choices. You either eat it or you don't.
So then you just weigh your possibilities.
Correct. And all things in life, because none of us are God, with rare exception, all of us kind of have to make the decision of... Let me put this. In a world where either I eat or I don't, you have to figure out what the I don't know, what kind of response the I don't know. Or to put it a little differently, there are two things that cause you to make certain decisions in life. Number one, the evidence you have for what decision you should make. Number two, what are the consequences of a mistake? In a world where only God can be totally true. You know, is it too much a heresy to say that God is aware of his own existence to a far greater extent than I am aware of his existence? All right. So in a world where I look at all the evidence, I also have to take into account what are the consequences of a mistake. And I think that whether we're aware of this or not, that's what we always do. We look at the evidence. And then we take into account, that doesn't mean, again, so it's a busy highway. Should you cross or not? if you're making a mistake, you'll die. Nevertheless, I can cross, but that just means I want to look at the evidence even more than I did before. I want to look one more time. I want to say the car seems pretty far away, but not far enough because who knows if he's going faster. I'll wait. So, but we still take into account the evidence and what are the consequences of a mistake to demand of ourselves more evidence or to err on the side of caution. But see, it's what's really important is that people think that they can opt out. I don't believe in God. I don't believe, or I don't know. We go to one more point. When we talk about a moral system, we can have a moral system which deals with our activities toward human beings, also to animals. After all, Judaism says that Judaism demands of a certain activity of care that you have with your fellow human, and a certain amount, but less care that you should have with animals. Animals, you want to have a certain amount of care, but you can kill them and eat them under certain circumstances. Human beings, I don't think it works that way. But the moral system talks about both. Do you understand, therefore, that when we talk about a person who says, I'm a agnostic or an atheist, how you deal with your fellow human being is not merely the theoretical points that you believe is true or false. It's also based on your system, what is the value of a human being? Because in Judaism, a human being has a certain value, an animal has a certain value. They are not the same. But there's certain things you should not be doing to animals. Just because of the tzar bayi lechayim, because of the keeping undue pain to animals. Now, the real question you have to ask that way is, a true moral system generally has to not merely define what you should be doing, but what it defines what is the value of the thing that you're considering doing something to. For example, you don't incarcerate an innocent human being. If a human being is guilty of certain things, it is more legitimate to put him in jail, but not to kill him. Under certain circumstances, you're going to kill him. And therefore, you really have to take into account, your moral system is likely to have to take into account, what is the value of the human being that you are considering actions against? So, look at the atheist, who says there's no God. What is the value of a human being over any other existent thing? In secular terms, a human being, and have any of you ever heard a book called The Confused Mind of Modern Atheism by Moshe Averick? I suggest it's a very intelligently written, bright, I think it's very entertaining. He's writing it from a firm perspective. I think it's very bright. I think whether people agree with it or not, or have some areas of disagreement, never a problem. I have occasional disagreement on a certain argument he gives or not. But my Moshe Aver, it's a brilliant book. He was from an Orthodox family, but he really got into Yiddishkeit when he met Reb Noach Weinberg. He wrote this book. And I really wanted to get him involved in working for Eishet Torah. And then about a year ago, early the beginning of this civil year, and last January, February, he caught COVID and he died. A good deal younger than me also. I would suggest for you to get it, all of you get it. It's a really entertaining book. And very bright. But points out that, and he quotes a lot of scientists in terms of scientific studies, and he quotes a lot of science and philosophers in terms of philosophy, in which very legitimate sources, including that picture, he had one quote of Sigmund Freud. It's not direct, I don't know if I get it exactly right, but Sigmund Freud said, the moment you talk about meaning and purpose in life, it means you're neurotic. basically points out that a non-God world existence of anything is no better than its non-existence. A human being, dog, a cat, an amoeba. In a non-God world, things just happen. One almost could say, are you familiar with Buddhism at all? Buddha said that existence itself is pain, and the best thing to do is not exist. The problem is if you kill yourself, you're going against karma, you're going to have to come back as a dog or something. So you got to get out of existence in the best way possible. I won't go through their mitzvot, but picture the idea. There is no God. All of existence, literally the existence of the universe itself, is no better than its non-existence. And therefore, the existence of any detail within the universe is no better than its non-existence. How on earth can you determine that killing a chicken is fine for a barbecue, killing a cow is fine for a barbecue, but killing a human being is a heinous crime? It should be pretty clear that if there is no God, our concept of morality is, in evolutionary terms, evolution's attempt to get us to maintain the species. God knows that the nature of evolution or nature itself is a non-existent reality, but that perhaps as part of our ongoing process, just as sex is a lot more enjoyable than not having sex, or whatever there is to maintain our species, but the species itself has, there's no intrinsic value for its maintenance. So in a non-God system, you can't talk about the value of any existent thing, and therefore killing it or destroying it or whatever is itself. It's just an arbitrary element in which human beings say, I would like to see the world a certain way, so we're going to make certain rules. I understand that, by the way. We're going to make decisions to stop at a red light and we go on the green light so we can have better lives. Ultimately, we can drive, we can have more order. I can understand giving up certain freedoms for the sake of my betterment in the long haul, but it doesn't tell me anything about morality. In fact, you know, some would talk about, I think the Nazis talk about, that nature is God. Nature is what makes demands on us. Hitler specifically said, only Jewish arrogance tells you to override nature. I think he was right. I think it's a lot of correct things about the Jew. He said only Jewish arrogance would override nature. And yet, nature says, look, I'm going to create something called sex, and it's really enjoyable, so that you can create a lot of babies. You're going to want that enjoyment, and as a result, you're going to do it and create babies. So does anybody think there's something wrong with creating condoms or birth control pills? Nature wants me to have sex so I can have babies. I'm going to have sex without babies. Who thinks that that's a terrible crime against nature? No, nature has no right to make demands of me. Nature created a system to maximize the number of babies. I override it. Nature has no right to make demands of me. You hear the idea? Now, to me, it makes a lot of sense, therefore, that when you have 200 years of secularism, where the basic statement is God is either non-existent or irrelevant, you're going to have a world where almost anything can be done. And it almost makes sense. If there is no God, picture of Noah Weinberg. There, you're a pleasure seeker. You want to get pleasure, and to get pleasure, you have to find out what's true. Okay, I found out that there is no God. The entirety of my existence will be governed by, from the point I'm born to the point I die. Well, I've been born a while back, so I'm going to look at life. I have a very limited amount of time to get pleasure in life. It may mean doing A, B, C, or even X, Y, and Z. What's wrong with me doing anything? I'm a pleasure seeker. My life has no meaning, but neither does anybody else. On the other hand, I am created as a pleasure seeker. I want to get the maximum out of life. Do you understand? in both different elements that we touched on. If there is no God, or if a world insists that that's how they're going to act, we shouldn't be surprised that the morality that comes from that is a totally self-centered one, in which each person will make their own decision as to that in the limited amount of time that I have to exist, I will do the whatever I need to maximize my pleasure. And the question of morality is totally not the issue. And so, therefore, the basic point being, it's not that if there is morality without God. It's not that without God, there's no morality. Without God, there's infinite morality. Without God, that's an alternative statement of truth. And then what would make sense in a world where we're created to get pleasure is to not let somebody's mistakes about what is true to get in the way. And to begin to understand, therefore, that when a Jew says, well, I don't believe in God, but I want a better world. Yeah, for whatever reason, we can go into it psychologically. But you particularly need to pat yourself on the back and people who are supporting on that. But it's you're doing what gives you pleasure. Why shouldn't anybody else do what gives them pleasure? Comments, statements.
I took a philosophy class in one of my first semesters when I was in college.
Yeah,
It was right after coming out of Gesher, and they were talking about what's the system of morality. And after having gone to Aish, I said, well, there can be no morality without some sort of infinite being, or it'll be changeable. They said, well, you have to take a little bit of a leap if you assume, what feels right to me. Well, I can't harm other people. That sounds good. And then they took a kernel of an idea and then build a morality based on it. But it's that trouble of you always have to have a solid starting point, and it's very hard to find something like that that's compelling.
What I'm saying, you even have to go to, you have to go more on the offense and say, I don't believe you believe that, because I believe that you believe that under certain conditions, World War II was a good war. It's worth risking our lives by the hundreds of thousands and killing Germans by the millions in their beds, not just the soldiers, because of my concept of called freedom. And therefore, you do hurt people when you think you ought to do it. So you don't believe, well, you shouldn't harm people. Just like you shouldn't kill people except for when you should. You shouldn't harm people except for when you should. So he really didn't say anything.
That's kind of like...
The atheist will agree along with the believer that if I have certain ideas, then it's okay to hurt people, including because, Binyamin, we are both in Yachid and Rabbi, we are both individuals and part of a group, but we're much more group than individual. What we say is that when your group makes war against mine, I can drop a bomb and kill little old ladies and innocent little children. In other words, we do believe, religious or secular, that what we believe as a group, it is legitimate to kill innocent people who as individuals are innocent, for the sake of coming up with a world that lives with my ideas rather than yours. So they don't really believe, well, you shouldn't hurt people. It's like killing people. Don't hurt people except for when you should. Now the question is, what are the truths that tell me when we should hurt people and when we shouldn't? But do you see, we're still on this in the same boat. And then I go back to Gabe's point, which is, if anything, we're saying we can make a solid case for God and Torah. But if you come out saying, well, I don't know, again, I would say, for the same way you would say, well, I'm not sure if I should cross the street. So caution means don't cross until you're pretty sure that you should. We're saying there's a, if you're looking at the possibility and you care about human life, you do forget it. You think you're an atheist, but you care about human beings. Well, you should take that itself should mean you should take seriously the serious possibility that the Jews are right. Now, I know there are other religions as well, but the success of Judaism throughout our history with, you know, when the argument I just made today in the last half hour would include generally the believing Christian or believing Muslim. So our effect on humanity, you know, not on the details of Judaism, but on the basic question of what is morality, tells you that we should at least have a major vote in what humanity should take seriously. But spot it next time it happens, Manuela. Spot the fact that leap of faith. No, not only do I not believe that you shouldn't hurt people ever, you don't believe it. That for the certain set of ideas, I believe in a certain set of ideas, you believe that we're going to hurt people, even if they're personally innocent of doing anything wrong. Does that make, you hear the idea, Mignon?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. Remember, none of this tells you who's telling the truth, but it tells you why you can't hide behind, well, let's just all join hands and kumbaya. Can I tell you guys, I don't have too much more time. I appreciate you being here. A new chiddush of mine. I think it's pretty new. I don't think I've had it more than half a year. A new chiddush on where anti-Semitism comes from. Picture the idea that secular concept started in the late 1700s and the early 1800s in European civilization. And it was since then, a lot of Jews thought that when the world goes from Christian to secular, they won't blame us anymore for killing Jesus. Things will be much better. But it turns out that the world is much more viciously anti-Semitic at a much more deeper level. You have the concept that the protocols of the elders of Zion, that the Jewish people are running human civilization, and the idea of a Holocaust. I mean, both the idea that the Jews are running civilization and the world's response to it, which is really vicious anti-Semitism to the point of a Holocaust. By the way, Binyamin, how many Jews did Hitler kill?
6 million.
It's a trick question. Daniel, how many Jews did Hitler kill?
I mean, we don't know.
The answer is
he personally killed zero.
6 million Jews died because when Hitler said something, a few hundred million goyim said, "We're with you." Let's not pretend that there are these 5-10 Nazis. I don't know how it happened. And humanity is so nice. I can't imagine how these 10 Nazis. It wasn't. A guy said, "It's not just me." And a few hundred million people said, "You're right." And we've got to be real about humanity, okay? So I have an interesting theory. Why is it that secularism has actually created a deeper level of anti-Semitism than Christianity? Killed Jesus, etc. So let's put it, do you guys remember the class called the Seven Wonders of Jewish History? It's a class in which we go through, you know, what the Torah says you can expect in history as a result of the Torah being true. And you see, for example, Torah goes through the idea that the Jewish people are eternal. Nothing, if they misbehave, they'll be punished, but they're all around, they'll never disappear. And ultimately, at the end of history, we're the kingdom of priests in the holy nation. The Jewish, nothing can cause the Jews to disappear. And then another major, we're a light to the nations. And therefore, we're not surprised that now half of the world is Christian or Muslim. Whereas half of the world believes in the God and the Torah of the Jews up until Jesus or Muhammad. And then they had their own reasons to make changes. But Islam and Christianity both insist that up until Jesus or Muhammad, the only guys who had it right were the Jews. On the other hand, you have the world's greatest hatred. The Torah says we'll be the focus of the world's hatred, and it's Dafka, the Christians and the Muslims, who have that most nasty hatred of the Jew. And then you have few in number, where it doesn't matter how few we are, we're going to still be around and affecting the world. And the last two is the land of Israel, when it's bereft of the Jews, it will be a desolate waste. Even though in the entire biblical period, it was the Fertile Crescent, and every nation wanted to conquer it because of its fertility and its strategic location in the joining of three continents, Europe, Asia, and Africa. And therefore, when we leave, somehow the world will divert its attention. And at the end of history, we will come back. We're going to come back, and there will be a messianic age, etc. But the Jews are eternal, and we will go back to the land. Take these seven wonders of Jewish history, put it together with atheism. And I want to hear from your opinion the following. If you look, and by the way, seven wonders of Jewish history is one of those classes that stand alone. We give it to a group of goyim, just standing alone, the amazing effect of Jews on history, and the Torah telling us beforehand that this will work, that that's how it's going to work. Put the concepts of the seven wonders of Jewish history, the amazing effect of the Jews on humanity, together with non-belief in God or Torah. The seven wonders, but the guy says, I still don't believe in God, or if there is a God, I don't believe he wrote the Torah. So picture this. It's amazing what happened, but I don't believe it was God. So according to these people, who wrote the Torah? Binyamin, take these guys, a secular guy, who, and ask him, who wrote the Torah? What would they say?
Some old guys a bunch of years ago, maybe different people because of stylistic changes.
Very good. But I'm going to make this multiple choice. Who were these people? Were they French, Chinese, Indian, or Jews?
They were Jews, or the people who started the Jews.
Very good. In other words, if you don't believe in God or Torah, you believe a bunch of Jews wrote a book 3,300 years ago, said the Jews are going to be eternal. They're going to take over the world, kingdom of priests. This is what will happen in the future. Nothing will get in the way. They'll be the focus of the world's hatred, but they'll still be eternal, and they're coming out. Do you understand? If you look at Torah seriously, but you don't believe in God, this will explain the deepest level of anti-Semitism. It wasn't God. The Jews wrote the Torah. Obviously, they've been controlling the last 3,300 years of history based on their book. You can ask me, how do they do it? My answer is, I don't know. I don't have to answer. All I know is a bunch of guys wrote it, and this is the way it worked 3,000 years ago. Clearly, these guys are writing, are controlling history. Do you understand? By saying, it's like Mita connected me, by the Jews saying God didn't read the Torah, we thought we'll get the goy off our back. What you really created is a worse level of anti-Semitism. It's like we created Nazism. It wasn't God. The Jews wrote a book pretending it was God. And the last 3,300 years proved the fact. If you've ever read both Hitler and the Nazis, they don't say we are the dominant and we should. What they really say is a fear. If we don't kill the Jews, they're going to take over the world. People say, where did they get that craziness? The answer is because they read the Torah.
So in this structure, anti-Semitism is just a new Tower of Babel.
Very good way of seeing it. But do you understand? It makes sense. The guy who doesn't believe God wrote the Torah, anti-Semitism makes sense. What am I supposed to believe that some idiot wrote a group of idiots wrote a book and it just so happened to work out in that absurd way? So now, I've been telling people this. You remember Ken Spiro, who's the historian teacher? So I told it to him. His face lit up and said, Mati, that may explain something in my life. Every time I give the class seven wonders of Jewish history, I get he used the word 500. I don't know if he meant exaggeration. Every time I give the class, I get 500 responses saying, well, that's because the Jews run the world. In other words, I'm not simply saying it as a theory of anti-Semitism. I'm saying I've experienced it every time I do it, anti-Semitism. Yeah, because the Jews are running the show. They're pulling the string. But do you understand? It almost makes it's more absurd to say that a bunch of old fogies wrote the book and it just so happened that way. A bunch of guys saying, I'm God. This is the way it'll be. If it wasn't God, clearly it makes sense that the Jews are pulling the string. The least likely is that it just happened. What do you say, Daniel? Interesting?
No, very interesting, yeah.
So now, and by the way, when you tell this to a secular Jew, he can't allow himself to see it because he didn't mean to do that. All he meant to do was get God and Shabbos off my back. He didn't mean anything bad. If I can convince myself it wasn't God, I don't have to feel bad about doing it. Interesting thing to think about. What do you say, Benjamin?
I think it's a good thought. It's a strong theory.
Yeah, it's I don't know how it hit me, but I'm basically weird like that. I really do like history. If I would have been 6 foot like a lot of you guys, I probably would have spent most of my time developing sports. But at 5'7" and pudgy, I guess history was what took a lot of my time.